Vibe
Machine.
Hi, you are listening to Undercovers Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Giff. If this is your first time listening in, well, you are in luck. You are about to find out about some incredible album artwork by Masaaki Koike, Grammy Award winner and passionate music and art lover. Want to have the full Undercovers experience? Join us on socials, Instagram and Facebook. Look up Undercovers Podcast and make sure you drop us a review on whatever platform you are listening to this on right now. I'd really, really love it if you could do that. Now, on the previous episode, we had everything from Keith Sweat logos to Joni Mitchell's smoking habits and a lot of artwork for Black Sabbath, De La Soul and Cream. It's all dissected. This episode, well, rather than me tell you in this intro, let's just jump into the chat itself.
Vibe
Machine.
One of the ones I wanted to talk about, and really interested in this because this is sort of my era as well, is the Jesus and Mary Chain. And you did the Power of Negative Thinking box set, and that's on your website. And anyone, if you get it, you love artwork as much as I do, please check out. And I'm going to not be able to pronounce.
I know, nobody Fikes? Can.
Fikes?
Fixed
Fikes?
Design.
Fixed Design. See, I'm really bad at that sort of stuff. But Fixed Design, so it's phyxdesign.com. And if you go on there, Masaaki's got a whole bunch of the sort of the cream of the crop. And one of the ones on there is this Jesus and Mary chain. I was really keen about this one because, you know, did the band have any input? Where did you source all this material from? Because there's a lot in there.
Yeah, I think the great thing about working at a catalog label like Rhino is that, you know, I know that they're still like, you know, touring and, you know, I don't know if they're necessarily recording anymore, but all these photos and stuff were sort of provided, you know, so we'd have like a photo researcher. And they would try to find, you know, the best pictures from that time period. Yeah. And so like I have like a whole library of assets to work with, you know, that one in particular, I really, really got into only because, and that's actually a good example of they weren't necessarily somebody I knew of. I've heard some of their, you know, their hits and stuff, but I never owned their album or anything like that. I quickly fell in love because. You know, just that whole shoegaze sound, the layering and the whole like kind of sound was just so like, wow, what is this stuff? And I remember like, and I do this very, you know, often is I'll put like their whole entire, like, you know, collection of music up and just play it while I'm working, while I'm driving. I think the aesthetics for that really stem from, boy, these guys just, I mean, it's just layer upon layers of just texture, you know?
Yep.
And
that was kings
and
of
I
that.
Know, yeah, yeah. And they're really into, you know, the visuals of everything, you know, just the way they looked, the Reed Brothers like looked in their photos and the way they dressed and everything sort of like put me in such a weird creative, like it took me in a different way, you know, than I typically would approach a project. And that like, I try to tap into sort of their style as much as possible, you know? And that led me to like this whole, there's always like the easy way and the Masaaki way. Because I ended up,
I'm going to use that the easy way and the Masaaki way. I love it.
There's like this whole thing I did with a Pyrex plate and water and ink and trying to photograph it on a light table. And I really got down and dirty with it. And of course, it felt like the music, though. Like if this is a bucket of water or something, and you drop one like drop of like India ink into the bucket, you just see it disperse, and it kind of goes with their music, like the sound and the feeling of it. Just, I mean, the look of how it spreads, and especially when it's a heavy drop and it goes, you know, deeper into the water, and it just sort of disperses. It's so interesting, and I thought I got to capture this.
Well, that was my question. How did you capture it? So that's because that's the cover. Everyone who isn't looking at the album design, but I'm sure a lot of you are.
Yeah, it really was just trial and error, and you know, trying to set up the lighting right, and you know, trying to get like what I'm trying to achieve as much as possible. And I think it was you know, I love learning things like that too. It's like a new sort of technique I can add to my to my little, like, you know, collection of like things I have in my pocket where it's like, yeah, yeah. I'm like, oh, wow. And then if you look inside of the booklet itself, like, of, again, this is where things got really like out of control was, you know, and it's really hard to do because, I actually took all the liner notes and I printed it out. I typeset it, got it all approved through editorial. And then at the very last stage, when there's usually no time, I decided, well, what if I actually like print out the liner notes just on, you know, black type on white paper. And I actually like, you know, made it sort of made the ink sort of like look like it's in diffusing. And so,
wow.
Yeah, that was just a big, big,
I can see that
ass.
Now.
I don't think I would do that again, but you know, it was,
I can see it. I can see it on the images. Yeah. Yeah. Cause it sort of like looks like these starbursts of color, but then you can see the type underneath. It's amazing. That sort of stuff is the stuff that I don't understand. But when someone explains it to me, I'm like, oh my God, that's exactly how it was done. It wasn't done on a computer screen on a bit of Photoshop. It was manually created. And it gives it that authentic, that authentic feel, doesn't it?
It does. And it was probably really risky to do, only because if the type changed or if the thank yous changed, if something happened with, you know, I think I just did the liner notes. I didn't do the actual credits themselves because credits tend to fluctuate till it actually goes to print. But yeah, that was like something that I had a lot of fun experimenting with. And the other thing too, I remember was I took photos of the photo on the screen because their music videos had so many layerings and weird textures and weird glitches, and the digital era was kind of kicking in. And so I set up my camera. I would call up the photos on my screen and have my camera sit in front of the screen and sort of try to get like, the little cells and get all the details of all that stuff to kind of add to the photo without. So that wasn't like a digital trick or anything. It was just like an actual photo of a photo on the screen.
It's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. And, it fits with both the Jesus Mary chain, but it also, the artwork also complements the creation years, you know, and because Creation Records, obviously, who sort of found it and bought up the Jesus Mary chain, and everyone should watch the Creation documentary. It's amazing. It's got a lot of Jesus and Mary chain stuff in it, and who they influenced. You know, they influenced Primal Scream, and they influenced pretty much everyone. This still has that feeling where it's a companion piece to those, to that Creation sort of style, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think the typography, there's a lot of weird stuff going on. I never really dissected the whole thing really as much as I'm doing now, but you know, even the type and everything, I didn't want to just set it, you know, I wanted to kind of pull the little, you know, bits and pieces of it and sort of like stretch it and like expand it and do all these crazy things. And I remember, I think for the CD pockets or something like that, like I registered it so that the clear hub, like through the clear hub, you can actually see the disc number or something.
Yes, you can.
And yeah, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, you get lost in those little details. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've probably picked one that you've thought, why is he talking about this one? I want to talk about, because I'm really good at that. I'll pick ones that perhaps you hadn't thought about beforehand.
Yeah, that one definitely. I don't think I've ever really had any sort of discussion about it for sure.
Amazing.
But I can say that I actually, there's some things like, you know, like that you look back at your career and you're sort of regret it, or you feel like, for sure, I could have done better. That one sort of like has sort of stood the test of time in some ways for me.
Yeah.
You know,
very, very cool.
And that's always nice. Yeah.
It is. And it looks fresh and it looks new and it looks like something that, and I always say that if you can have it on a wall, you can have that on as a poster on a wall and it, you know, and it stands the test of time, you've achieved your purpose. And you've definitely done that with that one. But I thought we should talk about the one that sort of, I don't know if you're most well known for, but it's the one you won a Grammy Award for. And, and prior to this, purely because I didn't know how to pronounce your surname, so I apologize for that. And so I went and watched a YouTube video to hear how someone else pronounced your surname because I'm that shallow and I'll try and figure it out. And I watched a UCLA video that you'd done where you did an interview, and it was, I think, it was straight after you'd won your Grammy Award. And you won the Grammy Award for what it is, Funky Soul and Rare Grooves box set, which is incredible. And highly deserving. of a Grammy Award. So congratulations on that, sir.
Thank you. Yeah.
And the snippet that I watched, and I admit I didn't watch a whole lot, but you mentioned that it took about 6 months from start to finish to put that together. That must have been all consuming for you.
Yeah, it was. Really, it's probably redundant for me to say it again, but it's just those projects are so fun. I had such a good time. Like, this is all under Rhino. Yeah, I definitely, because I came from a hip hop background, the tracks and the artists that were on that box set were very well known to me.
Amazing.
And the two producers that, I worked with, they've been working on it for years, and it was like their little baby, and.
Mm.
So for me to say I worked on it for 6 months, it's like, yeah, that's a long time, but they've been working on it for like years. But I was really, that just every aspect of that was a lot of fun. I think that's really where I started to get more comfortable with just special packaging in general. And just the process of knowing how far I can push it, and what options I have. The recordings that are in that package were really like the starting point of like why it ended up being on cardboard and screen printed, and a lot of it was because, they're unproduced tracks, there's a lot of like it's unfinished and it's just all out of tune, but that's what was beautiful about it.
It's very and raw, isn't it? Yeah.
It's very, very, very raw. Yeah. And that's funk. It's like, the stuff it wasn't as polished as the Commodores and the Spinners and all those other bands that were out at the time. These are just like some of these bands are pretty much in full obscurity where they had one 45 record or something, And so as far as the design, I mean, it really was about like, I wanted to use cheap materials, something like chipboard, that was sturdy enough to carry everything. But also like, I wanted to screen print it, make it so that the ink sort of like settles into the paper. And all these little details, that I really wanted to achieve. And I remember when we went to the printer, everything was signed off on. We got everybody to agree on, the chipboard material. And then the chipboard came in and it was a slightly different than the sample we had, in that when you print on chipboard or like any paper stock, there's one side that's coated. And when I walked into the printer and it was screen printed, I was like, wow, this looks like it's too sharp. And they kind of looked at me like, what do you mean? I'm like, it looks like it's a little bit different than the samples that we've been looking at. Cause the samples had like little crackles and stuff. And like, there'd be moments where like the ink wouldn't, like the screen wouldn't reach like sort of the valleys of the paper. So there'd be like these little cracklings and stuff. And they're like, well, we have a whole like palette full of this chipboard. I don't know what we could do. I remember the press check taking forever. And then finally, I honestly don't remember who recommended it. It wasn't me. Somebody said, let's try flipping the board and printing on the uncoated side. And then all of a sudden, they came back and I remember them looking at me like, we tried it, but I don't think it's working. It looks really bad. And then they showed me and I was like, that's perfect. That's exactly what we're trying to do. So every single one of them have like a different sort of like blemish, I guess.
Yeah. That's great. It makes it unique, each one is.
It makes
its own,
it unique.
Yeah, I love that. I think
the most important thing too is I think that was the first time I started to really understand that, like, when something like we made 15,000, or we printed 15,000 units.
Wow.
And then it sold out, and then they re-ran it again. But I think for the two producers, I think it was Mason and Matt. They really pushed that project through, and I was really proud of them. More than anything, it was just I called it the 3M project because it was Masaki, Mason, and Matt.
I love it. I love it.
And just you never know how it's gonna end up. And I was really pleased with the way it just felt like it was analog. We printed on uncoated stock for the book and everything, so it felt like it was tactile.
It was. It's really funny, Masaki, because when we started the interview. And you were talking about your history and you were talking about, growing up in a rough neighborhood and being, the graffiti and being inspired by all of that. The whole time while you were talking, I was looking at the What It Is packaging. And as you were talking,
funny.
And I felt, I felt like saying it at the time, saying, I can, what you were talking about in your youth, I can see represented in the What It Is packaging. And now that you're talking about it now, it, you know, and because you know, you're talking about, you know, the artwork at the time and the graphics and the typography, you talked a lot about how you love different typography and how you were fascinated by by things, you know, logos and things like that. And you've got all of that encompassed in this packaging, yet it's not overdone. It's still quite sparse and quite, you know, you've got the sort of the psychedelic woman's head with the afro and sort of repeated across and things like that. So if anyone's looking at it, you, I'm hoping that you can pick up what I pick up. So the process of being nominated for Grammy and then winning a Grammy, what was that like for you?
You know, when that first happened, that was like the first time that I actually was ever nominated.
Wow.
And so everything kind of like happened really, really fast. you know, there's two categories for best packaging, and then there's a best special edition, limited edition packaging or something like that. And I actually was nominated for the first category as well for Black Sabbath.
Wow.
And then, so when we were there, you know, the first category, you know, they announced it. I didn't win. And then the second category is when I won. It really kind of took me aback. I've never been to the Grammys. I don't, you know, I didn't, actually, I'd never been to an award show, period. So, that was pretty surreal. Yeah. I'm so glad it was sort of, they might have had a pre-telecast at that point, but I'm glad that, you know, it wasn't while, like, you know, all my friends and family could see me online. I hope no one saw it. It was pretty embarrassing. Yeah. I sort of ran up there and kind of like as if they were going to take it back or something. I don't know. I just kind of like, I had a knee-jerk reaction and just ran up on
Give me that thing. You know,
was like, yeah, I didn't write anything out, you know, because I've, like, there was no, this is just good enough.
They haven't given you the heads up that you've won. So,
yeah.
I love it. Right. I love it. But look, we should jump on because as you are finding out, I am a talker. And as everyone knows who listens to these, I am a talker. So, wanted to jump from that one to an act that that I find very, very interesting. And, I'm curious to see whether, and I'm sure you did find them more interesting as you started working with them. And it's the Grateful Dead. Because you've done a number of their box sets and package designs, and I've been to San Francisco, I've been to Haight-Ashbury, and your artwork and your design could fit perfectly in any shopfront there, even today, because they've still kept a lot of that same hippie era alive and well there. So, was really, really interested in how the approach you took when it came to the Grateful Dead, because they've got a lot of material out there, don't they?
Oh, they have a ton of material. You know, it's funny with the Dead because, while I was actually at Rhino, I never did anything for the Grateful Dead.
Wow. Okay.
And it wasn't until I left, that I was assigned, a Winterland LP release or something like that. And, you know, a lot of the bands, you know, at Rhino, like I knew of them, I knew their songs, I knew, you know, but I wasn't in any way a Deadhead. You know, so that's where, you know, going back to what you're asking earlier about, like, what the process sort of is with, you know, in that particular example, like, I sort of had to refamiliarize myself and go back to the albums and just try to do as much, like, reading as possible, you know, of, like, just what they stood for and everything. And I found myself, like, really fascinated with them. And look, before we get started into the Grateful Dead, I have to openly admit that, like, I like Dead, but I am not a Deadhead, because I know how Deadheads are.
And that was my point. My point was, you've got a lot to live up for, because if you have artwork that doesn't fit, you've got a lot of people not happy.
Yeah.
People are very passionate.
I think the reality, too, is, like, you know, it's impossible to make, like, everybody happy, you know?
I just hope that
maybe with this podcast, I can justify myself, you know, to why I made certain decisions. You know, but yeah, it that comes with a legacy, you know. I mean, they're you know, what they stood for, the time period that they did it, you know. I love everything about, like, the band members and hearing their stories and, like, you know, why they were the way they were, and, you know, all the experimental drugs they took and, you know, how it was all singular, like their life, their music, you know, it was their, you know, everything was all one thing.
They were hanging out with the iconic writers of the time. And, you know, they had one of the tripped out writers who would drive their bus around crazily. I remember watching a documentary and I found that incredible. They had this famous writer who was just off his head driving around their two of us. I thought that was, you know, so fitting of the time.
Man, if I could ever go back in time, I think it would have just been, because I think their music is, I guess a lot of people from that time period, you know, it's very kind of contextual, you know, like.
Yeah, it is.
If you had lived through like the late 60s, you know, and early 70s, you know, there's a lot of tumultuous things happening. I mean, there is a lot of stuff going on now in sad ways that not much has changed, but like, you know, there's a lot of like civil rights issues and, you know, the Vietnam War was going on and the Pentagon Papers and all these things were happening around that time period. A lot of
the gay rights were starting to come about, especially in San Francisco at the time. Rights.
So, yeah.
And so, it was an interesting time to live, right?
It was. And I think the more you understand that and you contextualize their music, you start to appreciate it more. And the bigger picture is that I think I find a lot of purpose in working on these sort of compilations and these like box sets, and, you know, working with the catalog labels, because if it wasn't for them, who would be putting this out, you know, and, who would remember the dead, you know, and it won't speak to everybody, but, it's certainly a voice that everybody should listen to.
I find it odd that people who do pick it up, because you get people who aren't of that generation who, like me, I see artwork that I really like and I'll go buy something to check it out. And it opens them up to a new era as well, or a new legacy, right? It's incredible.
Yeah. And so, that was, this is like, now I've been dealing with them for a while now. And, you know, I think my appreciation for them deepens quite a bit because, you know, you start to understand more about what they stood for and who they were and what they did and what they've achieved. You know,
and some of the designs you've done. I mean, I'm looking right now at the May 1977 package.
You've got the sort of the box set, and it's the paper that's got all the cut. It's all cut out.
And then you've got the die cuts. Yeah,
the die cut. You always forget that word, the die cut. And then you've got the I should remember that one. And then you know they're sort of individual booklets for each CD. That opens up to this incredible detail and these amazing photos and how you've laid them out is just incredible. And it's once again, very fitting of the time. So, you know, the research that you must go into and the researchers must go into, I would find that just as, and you've mentioned it, you find that just as fascinating as actually putting the final product together, correct?
Yeah. I think that the trick is, I mean, for me at least, look, there's like the guys that did this artwork in the 60s and 70s, like, you know, primarily like, you know, the San Francisco Five, like, you know, like Victor Moscoso or Stanley Malice and all these people that did these like Bill Graham posters, you know, that time period. Like, you know, I went to school looking at that stuff and just it was in awe of it. You know, I mean, it really, it's still, you know, it's just mind blowing, you know, how cool it was to me and like how sort of abstract it was and what they did with type and how they used imagery and how they all married it together and, you know, what did it mean? I don't know. Why is there an Indian there? I have no idea, but it doesn't matter right now. It's like a visual trip, you know? It's like if there's any way you can visualize a trip, it would be like looking at one of those posters with the weird colors and stuff. Yeah. But more importantly, though, you know, it's like I'm not here to try to knock off Victor Moscoso. Like, he's like my hero, and there's no way I'm going to do a good job as he did and has already
done.
You're
complimenting what he did.
I'm trying to update it, and that's, you know, I'm trying to do something where it's like, I think the reality is a lot of the people that went to these shows, you know, they're not the ones probably buying this box. It's probably, hopefully, the younger generation we're trying to go after, like the 20-year-olds that know of them maybe are interested.
They need
or maybe
a good
they are
off
really
point.
Into them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like kind of like, oh wow, okay. So this looks like it's sort of an updated, you know, good reference point for me. Like ever since, you know, I've been working at Rhino, like I've always looked at Criterion Collection as a good sort of like, you know, model because you know, they have a catalog of films, and yes. all their covers are look like they're beautifully done now, you know. It doesn't look dated, and they're not trying to match the 30s look or the 40s look or whatever era the film came out in. You know, they're trying to make it something that looks contemporary.
And you've got to make it relevant for today.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people just get lost in the mix. You've got to make it something that, like you said, is updated and something that will be consumed by people now and in the future.
Yeah, exactly. And one foot in the past, one foot in the future. You know, you sort of want to make sure that you sort of like encompass it all.
And you capture that perfectly on a lot of these. And, you know, everyone should go and check out. There are four or five Grateful Dead, at least, packages that Misaki's done. And they are beyond, you know, above and beyond what I would ever. I mean, the one that blows me away is Get Show on the Light. When I was writing notes and I was looking at this a week or so ago, I was like, how on earth did you get that amount of detail into that set and come up with that design? So if anyone doesn't know, it sort of looks like a, you know, and it brings that Japanese influence that you were talking about with the different sort of paper and the different sort of folding and unfolding, and, you know, your dad would sort of chuck it away. This has that look. It has elements of that dad, Japanese look. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because I actually brought in some examples of Japanese packaging for this. And again,
there you go.
You know, it's fun. I've never really like looked back at my career like we're doing now. And, you know, like this is, I think, Get Shown the Light is definitely a piece that like I felt confident sort of approaching it, even like just, you know, like pushing as far as I could push in terms of like just the structure, and forget the graphics for now, but like just the structure, what could we do, you know, that's really like, you know, I mean, I think like there's multiple parts, like special packaging. It's a lot of money to ask for people, you know, their hard earned money to pay for a box set like this. I don't want it to just be the cover. Like to me, I want people, like when I buy Criterion Collection movies, you know, I know that even though it's $40 and I could probably just watch it streaming, you know, you get like the liner notes, you get like all the information and the interviews and the documentaries and all the things that come to support the film.
It's 100%
vital.
It's why you buy it and you don't stream it.
Right.
But that's me. I still buy CDs. I buy vinyl because I can't hold it. And I hate the fact I can't hold it.
Right. and I think that's where I want people to go home, and I want people to experience it, like take it apart piece by piece and look at it. And, you know, it sort of creates like a good sort of, you know, following for like a label like Rhino or something, where it's like, you know, they trust that they're curating this music for the people to consume, you know, and putting it in within a context, because you have to for the young generation. They don't know. You can't blame them that they weren't, you know, I wasn't around in the late 60s either, you know, so it's like, unless you really care and put effort into it, like, you know, no one's going to tell you, you know. And these box sets sort of provide that. The other thing too is in terms of just the graphics itself, I think with the Dead, you know, they're obviously, you know, the pioneers of the jam band, you know, music. It's bizarre. Like, I find myself going on these crazy long tangents, you know, sometimes when, like the other day I was listening to Dark Star. If there's any audio of like what it sounds like to be super high, that's kind of it. And you sort of like time just sort of is a blur. You know, and sometimes I go into these weird, crazy tantrums with the Dead stuff.
Yeah, and can you imagine making it? Like, they must have all been on everything under the sun. Yeah, but at the same time, they've managed to somehow keep it consistent and concise. It's just, you know, they managed to still play along. I don't even know how they do it, because from all reports, Jerry Garcia at times couldn't stand. So, you know, but they managed to keep it all together. And just jumping to one other, which is the May 8, 1977 LP, that has a very Indian sort of feel, because a lot of the psychedelic feel has that Indian sort of bright colouring. But that's what I take out of that one. And I love the fact that it's sort of a box that you unfold, and I love the little sleeves that the CDs go into and everything like that. It's just incredible. So when you're looking at it and you're looking at different, I guess, different times of the band and different shows and things,
you know, do you pick up on more of, well, this sort of has that more Indian sort of feel, so I should go down that tangent? Is that how you think about it? Maybe Indian's the wrong word. I'm just but you sort of look at what's around it, happening around them art wise at that time.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that's really great about the Grateful Dead is you can't really, like, they play so many different kinds of music.
Yeah,
you know, the artwork lends itself to not just being like, you know, Skulls and Roses. Yeah. You know, I was trying to make it a little bit more balanced, I guess, because if you see a lot of their, you know, the collection of stuff, like there's a lot of like the common theme, you know.
Yeah.
They have a lot of visuals, like the teddy bears and stuff, and, you know. But the one thing that I really sort of like gravitate towards, and I remember as a kid too, like seeing the Grateful Dead Steely like symbol. And I used to always think, like, what in the world is that? But it's just so interesting because it's like this kind of top view of a skull, you know, not your typical straight on or three quarter shot of a skull. It's like from the top POV. Yeah. And I thought, wow, that's really strange and bizarre. But yet, like, it makes sense. Of course, it's because it's the Dead, you know?
It was.
That becomes like a great sort of asset to work with, because the moment you see that, you know, it's the Dead, the lightning bolt and everything. That's the Dead, you know?
It's amazing. It's amazing that I start
off with something small and simple like that, and I think I kind of go off like from there and stem from there. And, you know, looking back at it now, like, it kind of lends itself nicely to like the way I work as well. You know, I like to just kind of get lost in things. You know,
you must definitely get. I mean, you would get so lost in the Grateful Dead. You could spend years really researching it to, you know, and you obviously have. You've spent a large amount of I'm researching a lot of this stuff. If you haven't seen these packages, please head to Phyx Design, that's phyxdesign.com, and you soon will understand and see exactly how much detail and research Masaki has done to create the box sets that will stand the test of time. Our final part of Masaki's chat is coming up next time on Undercover's podcast, and you'll get to hear about the cars, Woodstock, hear even more about Masaki's process of creating art and working on these huge, enormous legacies.
Vibe.
Machine.